This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Terps lose 58-55 last night. They were down 9 with a little over 5 minutes left. Down 7 with a little over 2 minutes left. Came back to tie it, but they lose on a half-court heave. And let's head out to the Window Nation fan guest hotline. Chris Nocke was on the call last night with Johnny Holiday and Walt Williams right here on 105.7 The Fan. He joins us now. And Chris, gut punch loss last night. It was a disjointed game for them. I thought Tom Izzo described it well afterwards, calling it a rock fight. Just your thoughts as you've had some time to digest it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure either team played particularly great. It was one of those things, though, Ken, where you had two big, physical, mature teams, you know, that had at each other. And I guess you could have predicted that it would be tough to score in that game, you know, going into the game. And that's a little bit counterintuitive because both teams were averaging around 80 points. Terps a little higher than that going into the game. But when these two teams play, it always seems to be that kind of game where it's just tough to get a bucket. And last night was no exception.
I mean, there were a lot of things that we could have kind of laid out and said, all right, if it turns out to be an Izzo-type game, right, then the Terps aren't going to shoot to their season averages, and the pace might not be what we're used to. It's going to be deeper into the shot clock before offense gets going. But, like, for me, it kind of almost comes down to 13 offensive rebounds for Sparty, 4 for the Terps, 28 to 16 points in the paint, 10 to 0 second chance points, right? When it's settled by a 3 at the end of regulation, and not only do they get it played at their number, their way, but they beat you in those categories too, that almost makes me shocked that it was even this close.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've been doing the games for 26 years, right? We've been playing Michigan State on and off during all those 26 years. And the recipe, the keys to the game against them have never changed. It's always you have to rebound. You have to get out and stop their transition. They run on made baskets. A lot of teams really run primarily on misses and long rebounds. Michigan State does it a little bit differently. And you have to get back because they get some easy buckets on you, and not just on Maryland, but on anybody. And the Terps didn't really do it. You know, I mean, 17 more shots for Michigan State in that game, right, as a result of those offensive rebounds. Some of that was mitigated by Maryland's, you know, advantage at the free throw line. But it's hard to make that up. And not only that, it's just deflating. When you get a stop, you force a miss, and you're not able to collect the rebound. It's batted out, and then they reset at 20. It's one of those things. I thought the Terps down the stretch, because of those elongated possessions, I thought the Terps looked a little gassed down the stretch. And some of it was those long possessions. Some of it was the fact that, you know, Michigan State subs like a hockey team.
Yes.
You know, you just got guys flying in over the board. And it's just they're an anomaly. You know, fortunately, you don't have to see that in every game that you play. It makes it tough to play them.
Chris, focusing in on Derek Queen, we heard Kevin Willard after the game say that maybe he was a little too amped up. It seemed like he was settling for some mid-range shots, shot a couple of threes, missed a couple of free throws as well. What did you see out of Queen?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I had not heard that from Kevin Willard. I thought the team was too amped up to start the game. It was one of those games where I said on the air a couple of times, just exhale. Just relax, you know. That crowd can be a double-edged sword. And I was talking to Ben Hall before I got on, and he was at the game. That place was otherworldly.
Yeah, we were all there. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, it was that atmosphere was
awesome.
Jacked.
Nuts.
And I just think that the team sort of wore that on the sleeve a little bit. Both and it also enabled them to come back. So I'm not dogging the crowd at all, and I love the energy in that building. It's just it seemed to affect the team a bit early on in the game. I just thought they were a little bit too off kilter, just wanting to do so well so badly.
Talking with Chris Nockey, it's Inside Access here on the Fan. Let's go to the Terps' final possession and Jacoby Gillespie taking the shot with what about 4.8 left. A lot of attention has been drawn to that because of the fact he missed and it was able to bounce out and the guy hits a half court shot. Your thoughts? Even Kevin Willard was asked after the game about taking the shot when he did. Did you have a problem with that?
I tell you what, man, we've ridden that kid's coattails this year. He's been the best player on the team in most cases. Don't know where we would be without that guy. He got a clean look. It was a bit of a bomb. There's no question about it. But there's 4.3 on the clock. I have a picture of the release, you know, at 4.3. He's trying to win the game. I have no problem with that. I mean, in retrospect, do I wish he had taken another dribble in or another two dribbles in? Well, yeah, maybe, but then you're dribbling into traffic a little bit more. I keep hearing everybody say, well, he'd been to the foul line all night. He should have gone in and drawn a foul. And, you know, then you have the element of officials really not blowing the whistle much in the last two or three seconds of the game because they don't want to decide it. I really have no problem with it. Fellas, it took a 65-foot shot to win that game. You know, I mean, it was a remarkable play. I've been in college basketball now 50 years, and sometimes you walk out of the building and you just think, man, the basketball gods suck, you know? And it rips your heart out sometimes, but sometimes you just get the feeling like, you know, it was preordained to a degree. And I love Jacoby. I love what he's given this team. I'm not gonna fault him for what he did and the choice he made.
It was a oddly nondescript night for Juju. You know what I mean? You kind of think maybe more about a couple of the turnovers than you do getting him activated offensively. Missed the dunk, missed a couple layups. Is he one of those guys whose legs might have gone a little bit down the stretch?
Yeah, that's a valid question. I thought he looked Michigan State just plays differently. Mm-hmm. Their bigs play a little differently. And I thought our bigs just didn't handle what they were seeing out there for Michigan State. First of all, Michigan State's so well-schooled. They're not going to let Julian turn over that right shoulder one time in the first half and let him get that little patented half hook that he's got. But for the most part, they were spinning him back the other way. They would not let him go, over his right shoulder. And then to your point about the particular play, one time he spun to his right, got an advantage, and missed the dunk. So, you know, he just seemed out of it all night, you know. Not sure why that was. I credit Michigan State on it. The Queen, too, to the point, you know, I mean, I thought he settled for Jays. Early on in the game, he took the ball to the basket a few times, and I thought he had a real advantage because Michigan State had felt like they had to cover out on Maryland's three-point shooters. So, but he stopped doing that. He didn't see much of it all in the last 30 minutes or so, and I don't know if it's fatigue or if it's Michigan State or a combination of, you know, 10 different things, but it just didn't happen. 55 points. If you told Kevin Willard before the game that Michigan State would score 58 in that building, he'd say, yeah, let's have a party. Bring it on.
How much are we winning by?
You know? Yeah.
Well, moving forward, Chris, from a coach's perspective, after suffering just a gut punch of a loss last night, I would assume it's a good thing that they're right back in action Saturday against Penn State.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you and there's no time to for self-pity. And, yeah, you get a chance up there in a place where we haven't played particularly well. But you know what? These guys, this is the good part of having such a new group and everybody's kind of in their first year with the Terps. A lot of these guys have no idea of our past up at Penn State where we struggled, you know, and it's been kind of a nightmarish place. But you get a chance to play a team that's, you know, that's wobbling, to say the least, and they were competitive for most of the game against Indiana last night before falling. I'm sure it'll be a tough game, but yeah, you want to get right back out and play for sure.
Hey, Chris, I think you've been to all of them. Why has it been, in your opinion, been such a house of horrors for them up there?
Well, it's kind of a dreary atmosphere, you know, and I know they're trying to pump it up, but I think for a lot of Penn State fans, it's, Hoops is just something you do in between football and spring football, you know, and honestly, you'll get them in there if you're good. We've seen some pretty good teams, Penn State teams, since we've been in the Big Ten, but if you got to be consistently good. Mike Rhodes, who they hired from VCU, you know, he just hasn't quite worked just yet, and that's not to say it won't, but it's, you know, it's a huge pro-style arena. They cordon off the top tier of the place with black curtains and move everybody downstairs. And you'd think that would help with the atmosphere. It's just, you know, part of the is the whole Happy Valley thing. It's just cold and different weather system. And I'll give you 20 different reasons, but it just doesn't, it doesn't vibe from a basketball perspective.
Terps take on Penn State this Saturday. It's a noon start, which means pregame coverage starts at 11 right here on 105.7 The Fan. Chris Nockey will be on the call with Johnny Holiday. Chris, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. See ya.
Coming up next, we get back to football. Purple rain in the forecast. And Eric DaCosta spoke on Tuesday about the salary cap and their limited budget as far as what they're going to spend. What do we think about this shell game they play? Speaking about the cap, Jason's got some really interesting numbers as far as cash over cap is concerned. We'll give them to you next here on the
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 3-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Man. Combine's still going on out in Indianapolis. Right now, it's that point in time where they're doing measures of the players from all the positions. But the team spoke earlier in the week, and the Ravens, both Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh, spoke on Tuesday. And Eric had the opportunity to talk about the salary cap going up.
It gives us a little bit more about when you're starting with as few dollars as we have. It's a savior, but we still would like to have more money. And then we're a victim of our own success in some ways because, you know, you guys remember – When I did become GM, one of my main priorities was to retain as much of our own homegrown talent as possible. And we have a lot of homegrown talent, which is a good problem to have, but it also means that we don't have as much money to go out and go after players that aren't homegrown talent. So any additional money we can get is very helpful. It still doesn't mean that we're going to break the bank in free agency. We're still going to be going after those veteran minimum guys, which, you know, George Kokinas and Mark Acevedo do a great job finding those type of players. We're still going to be trying to find the guys that we can get that we think are good value that maybe come to us and play better than what we expected. And we have a lot of those guys, right? And you know those guys that come in and you're like, man, this guy's really good. I can't believe the Ravens got this guy for $1.5 million. Those guys are critical for us to sustain the success that we've had because the reality is we just can't go out and spend $200 million in any offseason on players like some teams do. We're just not going to be able to do that.
So that was Eric DaCosta talking about spending $200 million on players in an offseason. Now, granted, the cap is over $200 million, and they will pay bills, but cash spending year to year is the issue.
The owner's making more money off this team than he ever has, and the value of this team, which, and he's made it clear he's going to sell it, it's not staying in the family, is higher than it's ever been. He just got a $600 million handout from the government, and now he's getting additional handouts on top of it because the spending on the upgrades they already promised him is going over original expectations.
He threw $20 million in, Jason.
Yeah, good for him. And it's just odd to me because the salary cap applies to all 32 teams, right? Nobody gets an exemption from it. Nobody has special compensation. It applies equally to all teams, right?
As far as I know.
So if I told you they're complaining about the salary cap, why they can't do anything, but what if I told you that 26 owners spent more than Silent Steve last year? So how can it be both ways? Like, if you're spending in the top 5 or top 10 every year and you want to bitch about the salary cap, I'll be inclined to listen. When you're 27th or 21st or 32nd or 23rd, that's where they've ranked numerous years since 2017. If since 2017 you've been in the bottom 10 in spending 4 times, but been in the top 10 in spending once, then I find it hard for you to be taking victory laps about $1 million bargain here or a $2 million bargain there. Because here's what I know. The team that won the Super Bowl last year spent over $65 million on football players than you did. They had over 3 times as many players making $20 million as you did, over 3 times as many players making $15 million as you did. So how can it be? How justify this for me. Make this congruous. How can a team that's spending more like the way John Angelo spent on his baseball team than Peter Angelo's did at the beginning, how could they always be crying about the cap? Because you know how you make more cap room? You spend more money.
Yeah, you push around. You push things forward. I agree. I wouldn't go as far as to say they spend like John Angelo. Yeah.
27th in the league.
But that's one year, though.
But 2 years before that, 21st.
And they were
then 11th. Angelo's was in the 12s and the 13th. Ah. Then it was 16th. Then it was 17th. How about this? You want to take top 10 out of it? Since 2017, The Baltimore Ravens have been in the top half of NFL spending on a per year basis two times. I mean, if that's good enough for everybody, then great. They got a gravy train rolling over there. They're good every year. They're not quite great. They come up less than you'd think, but they make a lot of money and they keep you thinking next year's the year and they keep doing the same stuff. Maybe it'll break through. Maybe it won't. Like, if that's cool with everybody, great. I'm just letting you know. 26 owners spent more than this guy last year at a time when he's getting one of the greatest sweetheart deals to fix up his stadium and make this thing worth more than $5 billion when he sells it. If you're cool with it, great. You guys go to more games than I do. Me, personally, I think it's kind of BS to be crying about the cap all the time when this is how you spend. When Howie's spending $70 million more than you in one calendar year, maybe you're not spending enough.
70, it was 60.
65.
Yeah, $5 million.
I'm rounding up.
Yeah. By the end of the show, it'll be 100.
No, it'll be what it is. But you know what? They'll keep pretending they're one of the biggest spending teams in the league.
Yeah.
I'm just calling out their lie. I didn't start this. But if they want to keep going with this narrative, like, oh, man, we're doing everything we can. We're so spent out. Steve's tapped out, man. We got nothing left. Then I'm going to keep calling out their BS because that's my job.
Yeah. But one of the teams that spent a lot more than them is one of the worst teams in football. So spending
doesn't, no, if you're good at what you do and you give yourself the ability to spend like the big boys, then you should be doing what Howie's doing.
Yeah, I agree.
Wouldn't you make the argument that, well, if he's as smart as everybody says he is, imagine if he had bigger margins.
What they do, and Eric alluded to it. And
see, I think Eric enjoys this, too.
Well, and so does Mike Elias, and I'm just saying, how's it working out for everybody?
Well, but they spend better than
something,
the Orioles.
Something that he said
They spend because the NFL makes
they're making
them
way more money, and their overhead is way less. Wait a minute. If you want to talk about spending on a profit-based like sort of pyramid, there's no way. What this guy makes only having to run this thing out there 17 times a year, he's got no overhead keeping his thing open. He's got no, I mean, like, he's making more money per dollar invested in this than any baseball team.
Part of it is this, and I brought this up earlier. They, every now and then, they'll take big swings at free agents. But what we have seen that is true at the time of signing is guys that they have drafted, they have made them highest paid. Now, it was kicking and screaming with Lamar Jackson, but you can look at it with Ronnie Stanley. You can look at it with Marlon Humphrey as well, just guys that are on this team, right? Roquan Smith, who they didn't draft, but they have done that. They just don't go outside of the organization typically to do so.
They're not a splash team, Jason.
Yes.
They don't like making splash.
It doesn't have to be splash.
They're going to make Kyle
$65 million dollars could be $5-8 million play. Like, you could close the gap any way you want to close it, but here's what I'm going to say. They're not smart enough to beat people like Howie and people like the Chiefs if they're going to spend $50 million less a year. That's what I'm saying. And you know what? I've got 10 years of evidence to back it up.
Yeah. Like, but again, they're going to make Hamilton the highest paid ever at the safety position.
And they'll make a lot of money off him. I mean, that's what that isn't that, like, okay, that's what winning teams do. I'll just say it again. They pretend like they're all in. Don't smell all in to me. Starting your offseason by bragging about how many $1 million bargain free agents you signed, that doesn't sound like a team that's all in to win a Super Bowl. And you know what? 26 teams were more invested than them last year. Right now, they project to be 13th. Once they make all their extensions, we'll see. I hope they're at least in the top 10. Is that too much for me to ask?
No.
That Steve's in the top 10 in spending next year in actual dollars, not their salary cap gymnastic BS.
They
is that too much? Is that too much for me to ask? Is that unreasonable? I know I'm an unreasonable guy.
You are. But they likely will have 12 draft picks, too, because they're going to trade Mark Andrews and get a pick of some sort. So they do love that inexpensive.
Don't obsess on cap space that's fungible. Go back and look every year. Go to Spotrac. Go to Over the Cap. Look at who's actually spending the billions that they're bringing in as an industry. Look at who's investing it back into the product. It ain't this guy.
Oh, does he spend more than Jerry, though?
He does now. Absolutely. Everybody's spending more than Jerry.
Yeah, Jerry.
And people are finally onto that, and Jerry's finally being held to account.
Yeah.
What Jerry's doing is absolutely criminal. It's despicable. If we were doing this radio station in Dallas, I would have started a jihad against that team. I would have given people money not to go to their games. I would ignore them. I would do 4 hours of radio and not even bring them up because all they want is the oxygen.
Yeah, that would harm.
No, I don't care. All they want is you talking about them, investing your time in them, investing your money in them. They want to rip you off. They're running a complete con shell game over there. This ain't that, but this also ain't good enough.
We'll come back and get back to the Orioles, and it's all the young dudes, but with a twist. Can they get enough from the old dudes? It's next here on The Fan. So before we get to the conversation, just an update. The Orioles won their spring training game today, but Gunnar Henderson was removed after one inning. Brandon Hyde said after the game, and this is from Jake Rill, covers him from MLB.com, quote, he kind of just landed on his side, and he just felt a little sore in there. In the first inning of spring training game in February, we felt the best thing to do was just let him go inside, look at it, and relax. They said no MRI, so nothing. We were worried it was oblique when they said side, but it sounds like it's just... You know, get him out of there. Between him and Jordan Westberg, you might as well have your ouchies early.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume he's not playing for a few days, no matter what. And let's face it, there are areas of this organization that you can thump your chest about the depth and the quality of the depth. As many shortstops as they've drafted, shortstop ain't one of those. The fall off from this guy to anybody else you would try to put there.
Servideo?
Yeah. And they'll keep drafting them, and they should keep drafting them. But this kid is literally the franchise right now. So hopefully that's nothing. You know, look, otherwise, Grayson got his work in. Good to see. We obviously want to see if that kid can throw 180 innings this year and get a little deeper into some of these games. Basayo hit another moonshot. He told reporters down there he thinks it's probably one of the three best strikes of a baseball he's had in his career.
And if you haven't seen it, MLB Pipeline tweeted out the shot of it. He literally hit it over the scoreboard.
Yeah.
Over the scoreboard.
Yeah. He destroyed that baseball. Tyler O'Neill was able to flex those
destroyed
muscles literally and destroy a baseball.
Razor Ramon.
The Razor.
Yes, the Razor picking up where he left off. Just, can't keep the Razor down for very long.
No.
Razor has nine lives.
Not to mention when injuries like this happen, that's when the Razor's at his best, man. When Westberg's out, Gunner's out, that's when Ramon really steps up.
Yes, that's when he that's when he seizes the moment. Yeah, I mean, look. This is a weird spring training for me because there's just no there that like we know, like barring injury, which God, we're all hoping not to have to talk about. The team is the team. They've set it up a certain way and they're going to roll with their guys and it's from within and they're going to sink or swim that way. And we're going to see who makes leaps forward and who doesn't. But there's not a lot of subplots. There's not a lot of like, not a lot of there.
It's great that baseball is back, but this is the appetizer in terms of the veggie tray, and you're kind of already over the veggies at this point. I'm ready for opening day.
So
for the sirloin.
Well, this is all the young dudes, but we're kind of going to flip the script here. How much can they get out of the old dudes, the Saganos, the Mortons, the Sanchez? I guess O'Neill is in that basket.
Why? Because he's
a veteran.
And his body is, I mean, can he stay on his feet department? His body belies his age.
Yeah, the guys that weren't being talked about when liftoff was said, how much are they getting out of those guys?
Well, I can tell you this. I'm certainly going to be watching the backup catcher market. Now, some of these guys like Jansen might prove to be a little bit more than a backup. But yeah, Darnold hit the market. There was a lot of names available, including McCann, who's still out there.
Yes.
I'm going to be watching it with a keen eye. They're clearly seduced by Gary Sanchez's power, and I understand that. He hit a ball 112 miles an hour off the bat yesterday. That's real. Excuse me. I mean, this guy slugged, you know, almost 500 a couple years ago. I get that. I would like more defensive consistency and defensive acumen from my backup. I'd like a guy who comes in with a reputation for calling a great game and for pitchers competing to be guys who get to throw to him. And that's not Gary Sanchez's career. It's just not. He's got a big arm. I like that. But he's not an elite throw and catch guy. I would have gone a different direction, to be honest with you. I know they don't want this guy to have to do as much as McCann did. But if he does, then that's where my concerns really would start to manifest themselves. If Gary Sanchez is catching for any period of time, for any reason, more than twice a week, I think we got problems.
Isn't that part of the reality, though? And I get it. We got to see it. But Adley Rutschman's got to catch more. Like that. It just is what it is at this point. He can't have him, whether it was a crutch, and quite frankly, it wasn't a crutch last year because he stunk the second half of the year. But he's got to be that guy. He's got to be like Gary Sanchez has to be more of the prototypical backup catcher and the guy that might give you some pop as a right-handed DH if they have some injury problems.
But I don't know that he is the prototypical backup catcher. I think he's the prototypical backup DH.
Maybe.
Or the prototypical backup first baseman. I would want the defense to be much more of his calling card and his toolkit than it is. I personally, with this team, again, if you've built it the way you have and everybody's as good as you say they are, including Adley, then I would rather have someone who skews more Robinson Chirinos than a guy who's going to try to hit 15 home runs no matter how many at-bats he has and how many plate appearances he has. And I'm not saying they don't need the pop, because especially in a post-Tony Taters world, right-handed pop, yeah, and if O'Neal gets hurt, like he gets hurt, then even more so, yeah. And I do think that's why Benuelos and some of these, like they've made an effort to keep guys who could be a serviceable backup in this system. Like, this isn't about Basayo. It's about having Benuelos and a couple other guys in the high minors who could come in and hold it down defensively as a backup catcher if need be.
And you brought up a good point earlier how when Jorge Mateo is back for this baseball team, and who knows when that's going to be, it's not going to be opening day, of course. How is that going to affect the makeup of the 26-man roster? Because he can effectively fill multiple roles in the fact that he can play middle infield and also outfield, which could grant you that extra spot for that third catcher.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to keep Sanchez's bat in the lineup, but you also want to have, you know, somebody else available as a catcher, and maybe even that guy being better defensively than Sanchez, which is not the highest bar to clear, then I think you can certainly navigate portions of the season with three catchers.
One thing seems pretty certain. Assuming health, Gary Sanchez won't be catching a playoff game.
Well, if that happens, then we've got real questions to ask about this organization. Because things like it happened. It happened in the first playoff game.
It's a joke.
The first of what turned out to be just a couple, because we don't win in the playoffs. Hell, we barely even have leads. But yeah, if we get back there for any point in time, then I hope the owner's really paying attention.
That would be a serious issue.
It was a serious issue last year.
It's a character flaw in your roster construct.
Yeah.
Like the fact, like your backup catcher should not be starting a playoff game.
Not when your starting catcher's a 1-1 who was supposedly major league ready defensively when you drafted him.
But the sad part is Adley was just that bad at that time.
Yes, yet he batted, what, fifth in that game?
And I told you guys in July I could see it coming, and I said if this happens, it's a blight. It's going to happen. I can tell it's going to happen. But my God, let's not gloss over and pretend it's not a big deal, because it is.
We'll come back at the text of the day, preview tomorrow's show, and get you ready for, is it?
Fresh Take.
Fresh Take.
Nice.
Beltway Ben and Cordell Woodland coming up at 6 here on The Fan. Before we get to the text of the day, I think it's important to acknowledge the passing of Gene Hackman, who was found dead in his home along with his wife and their dog. Gene Hackman passed away at the age of 95. It looks like a carbon monoxide accident in their New Mexico home. The length and breadth of his career, some consider him the greatest American actor.
Very well, maybe.
Bonnie and Clyde in 1967. You go The French Connection, where he played Jimmy Doyle, which is an incredible role. All these movies Bones never heard of. The Conversation, which was Francis Ford Coppola's follow-up to The Godfather, also nominated for Best Picture. Amazing movie. He was in Young Frankenstein.
Birdcage.
He was in the Birdcage. Played Lex Luthor in the original Superman movie, which was, as a kid, was fantastic. Was in Unforgiven. And maybe some consider the greatest sports movie ever made, Hoosiers. Among others. Crimson Tide. Like, it goes on and on.
I mean, you want to talk about somebody who's woven into the fabric of American cinema. It's utterly impossible to talk at any length and breadth about the theater arts in America and not talk about Gene Hackman in a meaningful way. Like, he's someone who, to me, was the quintessential character actor, yep, and also the quintessential, maybe the guy who didn't have leading man looks who could carry a film as a leading man.
Absolutely right. By the way, Bun, if you're looking for a movie that you might be into, Enemy of the State, him and Will Smith, and he was a conspiracy theorist, and he was right. It's an awesome, like, good thriller movie if you want to see something more modern. Enemy of the State, 1998, him and Will Smith. You ever see that, Jason?
I did not see that movie.
It's a very good movie.
I remember when it came out. Yeah, I remember hearing about it.
But, like, you're right about Hackman. Every movie he was in, he found a way to carry the scenes he was in.
Yeah. I mean, just a presence. obviously was able to live a very full and robust life, but anytime somebody goes, and to go that way is heartbreaking.
Rest in peace, Gene Hackman, gone at the age of 95.
That's a run.
Yeah, let's get the text of the day.
Check 1-2, check. Text of the day! Text of the day! Text of the day! Text of the day!
Okay.
Text of the day is sponsored by Oarsman Automotives, driven by OarsmanCars.com. Your trade is always worth more at Oarsman. Shop their entire inventory now at OarsmanCars.com. Text of the day comes from Joe in Baltimore, who says, Terps played a bad game and were a lucky shot away from winning. Terps are a better team than Sparty.
They have more talent. There's no debating that. They're not a deeper team than Sparty. Last night they weren't a smarter team than Sparty. No. And they're not as experienced in winning in those spots as Sparty is. And Izzo is a genius at getting you to do the things that he needs you to do to be able to ultimately beat you, especially when he doesn't have as quality of a deck as you have. He's got a deeper deck than you, but his five-man draw wasn't as strong as yours. But over the course of 40 minutes, can he find a way to be 1 or 2 points better than you anyway? And my God, does he do it at an astonishing rate.
It's defense and rebounding. That's Michigan State. They're not going to put up 90 points in a game. They're one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the country. They only have two players that average 10 points or more on their team. It's deep, but it's not star-studded.
By the way, Baltimore tie for Gene Hackman, Bone. He played the coach in The Replacements.
Yeah. Oh,
you saw that one, right?
I guess, yeah. Yeah. I have seen that.
Yeah, so he was the head coach. As the scab players, loosely based on that whole thing with the National Football League. But have you gotten over the last night was a bit of a gut punch. I know my drive home kind of stunk. I was talking to Ben. Drive home, but this was my father called me complaining. Like I'm sure it was much worse for the players, obviously, but for fans, it was not a fun drive home.
Yeah, I mean, look, that place was absolutely electric. We had Damon Evans on the show yesterday, and I did ask him about the aesthetic. I think the aesthetic matters. I think it's easier to capture people's imagination and to get, especially some of these young people, bought in when you do play the style of basketball that the Terps at their best play, not even aspire to play. The way that they can run and gun, I think that's sort of the era that we're in. And can you do it Izzo's way? Yeah, but that's a different basketball culture there. That program has been woven into that conference forever. It's just different. I do think that place can become even, you know, more of a cauldron than it's proven to be when you're also running people to death and making them defend every part of that court. I do think the style, when you're competing for people's attention and you're competing for their wallets and you're competing in a pro-style market like this, I do think that can help them. And most nights, that's what you get out of them. And again, are they going to have the kind of offseason that they did this past year? Boy, they set the bar really high. But I think Willard's figured some things out about this conference. I think he's figured some things out about this market. And I think he's figured some things out about basketball operations that make me, you hate the moral victory whole thing, yeah. But like there is a component to that here. From this particular loss, we've said it before, they don't need to play that style to win. They can win low scoring games as well. But I do think they kind of like to be able to run people into the ground and win big. The close and late situations are still a bit of a struggle for them.
It stinks because they dropped a game of that magnitude in terms of there was so much build up to it. This team had been getting so much hype, winning 8 of 9 coming in, a top 10 team. It's Michigan State. It's Spartan. The kids were lined up in the early morning before that game. Every single student seat was taken an hour prior to tip when we were done the show. There was just so much where, God, it would have been awesome for them to get a win. Is it the end of the world? No. They're still going to get a good seed. You'd like to see them finish the regular season strong, and they're still in position to get a top 4 seed in the Big Ten tournament, which would get them the double bye.
What do we have on tomorrow's show, Bo?
Tomorrow's show, Jimmy Patsos will be joining us in studio. Ariel Epstein will get our best bets with her. Mike Bordick, Baltimore baseball tonight, will be here before you know it. But you want to know what is here? His new podcast with Jerry Coleman.
Dr. Jerry Aloysius Coleman.
Their first episode got released today with Adam Jones, who used to be the
Wasn't that the last episode of the old podcast? Was Adam Jones and Mike Bordick also?
Possibly.
I think it was.
It might have been. Yeah. Well, this time Adam Jones is the guest, where Mike Bordick was the guest.
Yes. How about that?
Musical chairs.
And Andy Koska covers the O's for the Banner. Will be joining us.
The Fresh Take coming up next with Ben Hall and Cordell Woolen. Ben, real quick, you want to tell the people what they're going to get tonight?
Good breakdown of the Terps loss, unfortunately. Orioles, we'll listen to some Ravens sound from this week, and it'll be exciting.
No Orioles sound, though. Yeah.
They don't believe in that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the written word has always sufficed through the years, Jason.
Hey, we're running out of CAA games. Get to Towson tonight if you can. A big one against William & Mary. If you got a couple extra dollars in your pocket, I like NCAA and T on the money line tonight. They're getting 12. You can get it plus 500.
Wow.
I'm just saying... I like North Carolina A&T. I also
four units.
I like Hampton with the points as well. And it would not shock me if Hampton also won
parlay
straight out. A couple bucks, a money line parlay with those two. Again, it's, the odds aren't great, but I do like the matchups for both those teams.
Fresh Take coming up next. We'll talk to you tomorrow too here on the Fan.